Hey, Johnny, this is Cy Conan from The Fix here. I'm sitting next to Christine, and we're having a wonderful time. And I'm wondering how the hell I got here. Well, I just followed my heart and ignored the rules, basically, and something always was on my shoulder to take care of me when I needed it. And here she is sitting right by my side.
In a very motherly way.
In a very motherly way.
Yes.
Because I'm happily mothered myself.
Yes. Yes.
And you can never have enough mothers on this planet.
That's right.
I'm waiting for a matriarchal society to return to its full splendor. I'm sick of this patriarch shit. Men waving their dicks at me with the size of big weapons. I can't stand that. Did anyone ever tell them that I wasn't gay? I don't wish to see their guns in my face.
But most girls wave their breasts at you.
Yeah, but that's part of the act.
Yes.
That's the food source. That's part of the food chain.
Yes, correct.
So there we are. That's part of my sick mind, and I wish you well, dear Johnny. Safe travels.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host, Tommy Howdy.
All right. Hello. I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a great show for you today. My friend Kurt McMahon from the band King Corduroy is here, and we have a great conversation, but we'll get to that in a minute. I am on Vicodin. I had some dental work done, and I was feeling some pain. I was trying to just fight it off with the ibuprofen, but I broke down and took a Vicodin, so I'm a little bit out of it. Bear with me, because I am out of it. But I did do a lot of cool stuff this weekend. I drove down to Houston, played with Skyrocket Saturday night at a rich person's house, and I still don't know what the party was for, but it was really nice. It was a beautiful setting in someone's big backyard in their neighborhood, and I mean, it was right in the middle of a neighborhood, so they must have, I don't know what they did. They had all kinds of people there, but we were upstairs waiting for our food before the show, and we're sitting there, and around the corner comes celebrity chef Monica Pope with our plates full of our food. It was amazing, her and another girl. So that was really awesome. We got to meet her. She was very, very nice. The food was delicious. We had a really good time playing the show. It was kind of loose at first, and there was only a couple people out there, but those private parties are like that. What ends up happening is no one's out there in the dance floor in the first set. In the second set, they start to warm up. Some people come out. They're like, okay, they've had a couple drinks. They're lubricated. Sometimes, they're, you know, I think sometimes it's a work deal or they're just a little too sober and they're not really ready for the experience they're about to have, which is a really big and fun experience. So then by the third set, you know, the dance floor is packed. People are doing it. And then at the end, they want more. But you've done three sets and you're like, come on, man, what happened the first set? What were you doing? Standing around inside? You know, staring at this weird St. Francis de Assisi they had, statue. Anyway, then I went to my grandmother's house after the show, and I spent the night because the next day was her 90th birthday and her birthday party. So my whole family came over. It was great. The babies were there. One of my cousins is pregnant. My grandparents are pretty old, 90s old, you know. But my grandma's still kicking. She's still doing it. You know, my grandpa's hanging in there. He's not saying a lot these days. But he's doing it, and it was great to spend some time with my family. Great. And I have to say this, my Aunt Olga, always a champion. I'll thank her again. She gave me a plant. And some of you might have heard shows before where I talked about I was thinking about getting a plant. Now I have one. I don't know what kind of plant it is, but it's looking good. It needs to be watered once a week and get some sunlight. So I think I've got it in a good place, and I think I'm going to take good care of it. We'll be good friends. And my cousin Megan and I came home last night. And yeah, I've just been kind of trying to get it together today. Worked on some songs for Skyrocket for some weddings we're playing this weekend. And yeah, you know, doing the show. And got some interviews this week. Got Skyrocket rehearsal tomorrow. Got to return to the dentist to check up, see how everything is coming along all up in there. and we'll see how it goes. Once again, I'd like to wish my grandmother a very, very happy 90th birthday. We've always been extremely, extremely close, and it's nice that she's still around, and she's someone I can still talk to. Actually, I just talked to her a little while ago. All right, I made it through it. I did this intro like 15 times, because one of them I just laughed all the way through it. So thanks for bearing with me while I'm on drugs, and let's get down. All right, my guest today is Kurt McMahon from the band King Corduroy. I just recently played with them a couple months ago at the old Antones before it closed with Liars and Saints, and we talked about getting together and doing this, and finally the other day, Kurt was able to come by. Kurt's a great guy. He is the lead singer of the band King Corduroy. He's basically the guy behind the band and kind of makes a band out of it. And he has a lot of other stuff he's doing. He does some solo shows. He has a band called Cactus Fuzz. He has a band called King Biscuit Blues Review. And he sometimes plays Pigpen in a Grateful Dead tribute band called Deadeye. Anyway, Kurt's really entertaining. He's a great dude. He's got a great look. Go check out our Facebook page. You'll see a picture of him. And he's got a great look. Like, he works on it. He doesn't. He's just a weird hippie dude. I love him. So sit down and enjoy our musings on music from the South, and selling vacuum cleaners door to door. Here's my friend Kurt McMahon. Let's get down.
Been chasing me, and it seemed real hard, but I gotta take my time, 'cause they think, oh, I'll never get what I need. Yeah, I gotta get what I need. Yeah.
I don't always have people come in and start playing. A lot of dudes don't do that. Some dudes totally do. Can you hear yourself right?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Right. Does that bother you that I came in and started playing?
No, I love it.
Good.
You're a fucking musician. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
And unless you're a porn addict, you come in immediately, like, sit down at my computer and start looking up the...
That would make me uncomfortable. I'm going to keep all my clothes on during this, don't worry.
So, the show that we played together a couple of months ago was King Corduroy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good night. It was good to see you play.
Oh, yeah.
It was good to hear you play that night. And plus, then you dealt with my complete insanity the next morning when I thought I'd lost all my shit.
Oh, yeah.
But it was in my trunk.
That'll happen.
Jesus Christ, what the fuck is that? Yo, do you like to drink, Kurt?
Well, actually, I've drank, you know, for a long time, but I just quit. Yesterday was a month of no drinking.
How does it affect? I have a hard time socially without drinking. I get more nervous and awkwarder than I am.
Well, it's interesting, really. I didn't know. I thought about it for a long time. Like, man, I want to quit drinking, and that was one of the thoughts I had because.
Why do you want to quit drinking?
Well,
like you felt bad.
There's
like,
a yeah. That's one of them. There's a plethora of reasons. That's one.
Yeah.
It's like, man, I don't want to wake up feeling terrible.
Yeah.
And I was speaking to this piano player the other night that said hasn't drank for 20 years. And I thought he made a very poignant remark. He said that he was tired of waking up every day and feeling like shit. And then he said he would spend half his day just trying to feel.
Catch up
to feel how he wanted to feel.
Yeah.
So then he'd do it all over again. And he said, now I wake up, and when I wake up the beginning of the day, that's the best I feel. And that's my high, you know, that I look forward to. And, you know, I mean, the other thing is I smoke a lot of grass, you know, so,
yeah.
I mean, I got other ways to alter my state of consciousness or whatever, you know, lose my inhibitions, whatever it may
be.
But as far as, it's funny you asked about socially, because I go to the bar every night, and it doesn't bother me being around drinking, because it's like I said, it's a decision I wanted to make. Like, I felt like I would better myself if I quit drinking, and it just has played out. The way it's played out is interesting because observing other people, you don't realize how sloppy everybody is, man. But Oh my goodness. Yeah, and I always thought, well, you know, I'm a good drunk and I can hold my liquor, but I was like, damn, all the people that I always hung out with now, like, I mean, not to say that they're not, you know, lucid and succinct in their ideas, but they're just, you know, they're a little sloppy looking, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, we make our living on the stage late at night. And so I'm really enjoying, and I say sober, you
being
know.
Being present.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, dude.
But because, you know, it's difficult to say one and not the other, but there is a certain disconnection that happens when you drink. You do become a little sloppy.
Oh yeah.
You know?
But that's not, you know, and I don't want to just pin that on everybody.
Sure.
Not everybody that
of
drinks.
Of course not. It's bad. But that was a choice that you made personally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you feel good about it. Do you think you're going to, do you think about it in a long-term thing? Like, do you want to be the guy that's like hasn't had a drink in 20 years?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, I don't think. I just know.
Yeah.
I have a very addictive personality.
Sure.
And I've had addictions in my life that I've gotten past. And then I also quit eating meat, so it wasn't really an addiction per se, but it's a lifestyle change, and I haven't eaten meat in almost 7 years now, and people are always, you know, blown away by that, but I've quit smoking cigarettes, and then some harder stuff, you know, I used to do a lot of cocaine, I was bad on that, quit doing that, I kind of had an opiate.
That's an easy one, to me, I mean, yeah. I know that people do have a hard time with it, I shouldn't say, but that's kind of an easy one to...
Like, oh, yeah.
To be able to say no to afterwards. If someone all jacked up on coke comes up to you and you look at their face, you know, talk about sloppy face. They're like, oh, do you want to do some low? And you're like, no, not really.
Exactly. And that's how, while we're right here, I would say that to you every time. No, I don't. But it's interesting. The drinking will lead to other things. And
the
only time I ever found myself, you know, leaning over a mirror was when I was real drunk. And it wasn't something that I was like waking up to do every morning, but occasionally I would slip back into it.
Right.
And then one thing begats
another.
You get to
that third drink and you're like, go to your friend, you're like, hey, you got that guy's number?
Yeah.
Let's get the guy.
Yeah.
Let's get him to come down.
Exactly. That's the way it goes.
He's usually downtown on Wednesday.
Or he works the door or whatever. Yeah. You know, everybody knows the little.
Yeah,
this sordid alleys.
This thing is really turning into an interesting thing for me, because the last guy that was sitting there was an assistant district attorney.
Oh Lord!
Wish I didn't have this conversation with him.
Yeah, well,
obviously,
I'm a very candid person.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's what this is about. So is he. So Kurt, man, let's you come from the South. And you really wear that on your musical sleeve.
Oh, yeah.
You really do. You're like a Southern rock and roll guy, like a blues and country-based rock and roll guy. Am I wrong?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, people ask me all the time. They'll say, like, "Or what kind of music do you play?"
Yeah.
And I just tell them I play roots music. And then they'll be like, "You mean like that band, The Roots?" I say that a lot, but no, I mean, I just figured that's a really good way to kind of make an overall summation, because like you said, I delve into different genres. As far as like my foot forward that I'm putting with my band King Corduroy, I call it Southern soul music.
Yeah.
And and that's what I really feel drawn to, is like kind of the R&B sound of the South, out of Memphis and Muscle Shoals.
And you're from Alabama. You were born and raised there.
Yeah, I was born in Montgomery. And,
right. What was the... you're a young guy. You're not even 30 yet.
Yeah, I'll be 30 in August.
Yeah. And it's interesting. So how... Tell me about that. Like, you were born, did you have older brothers and sisters? Were your parents big fans of music? How did you end up kind of a guy from a different era? You know, for your age.
Well...
You don't seem like a guy that would want to know what Pro Tools was happening. You know what I mean?
I'm well versed in Pro Tools. You're right.
No, I dig read your bio. Obviously,
we'll
get to that. But
okay, yeah, yeah.
You seem like a guy that makes records on tape.
I dig what you're saying.
And records live in a way that you know, a lot of guys your own age might not do.
Yes. Well,
it's almost like the '90s didn't happen in your world. You know what I mean?
Oh man. Well, the 90s.
In the best way possible.
Well, too, I was pretty awkward in the beginning of the 90s, probably. You know, I'm trying to just forget the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, tell me where you were a kid. You were born there. Were your parents into music? Did you have older brothers and sisters that were like, hey, check this out?
Okay. Well, I was only child.
All right.
I have a younger brother now, but growing up, I was an only child. My little brother's 8 years younger than me. As far as the music goes, my grandfather is, both grandfathers are musical. On my mother's side, he's a singer, like big band style.
Oh, cool.
Great guy. Yeah. He's actually in hospice right now. He's like 93. But Daddy Joe.
Here.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. You know, long life, man. Yeah. He outlived George Jones, man.
Yeah, he did.
Got more years than George. But anyway, sorry, let me get back on point.
Yeah, yeah.
I started thinking about George Jones for a second.
Yeah.
That's really sad that he passed away. But anyway, so Daddy Joe, big band singer, and then my aunt, one of his daughters, loved to sing, and she would kind of do like vaudeville kind of show stuff. I remember we used to make videotapes of her.
Yeah.
I remember specifically one Christmas she did kind of like a little show for me on the camera, a little, you know, singing comedy routine. And I think my cousin was a drummer and he did something on it. And then my mom erased it. And it was like a really big deal. Like I did not
for
let
you.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah. I wanted that. I remember making a big deal of it. I don't think I've ever talked about it. Anyway. And so, that was, you know, that was kind of in my forefront. And then as far as my other grandfather was paralyzed, he'd had a couple strokes and, you know, he was pretty much in a bed all the time, but he had this old guitar, a Kalamazoo, that he bought originally in like 1935. And that was the first guitar I ever got. I've still got it. That's my favorite one. And, I showed a lot of interest in that. And so my grandmother gave that to me. And then I took music lessons in school. The school I went to was, it was like college prep.
You talking about high school?
Yeah, well, it was okay. Like kindergarten through
oh, okay.
through 12th grade, the same
was
school.
Was it like a more progressive school than sort of like being in the South?
Well,
you were in the deep South.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah, I definitely would call it kind of a liberal arts school. There's definitely a good emphasis on fine arts and
sure.
A lot of resources put into that. It was a progressive school, but it's still Montgomery, man. So, I mean, you know, it's pretty closed-minded. There was, I don't know, it was almost like this interesting paradox because in some ways they were, you know, progressive thinking, and then in other ways they were just stuck in the past. But I felt like I definitely got a great education out of it. Great English department, man. I can't tell you, like, most of my professors all had doctorates. I remember one of my professors had taught at Oxford, one of my English professors, and, like, I remember just getting really, like, my grades in English were not that great in high school, and then I got to college, and it was like, you know, I was Hemingway or something. reading, especially doing other people's peer reviews, I was like, oh, my God, these people have taken English classes? Like, you know, but that's state public school system, but anyway, the school was helpful in my music. They had a great music department. I joined the choir when I was in like third grade, and they had music lessons at school. I took piano first and then guitar, and I did like speech and debate. I was a state champion in after dinner speaking. Yeah.
What's after dinner speaking?
After dinner speaking, you're right, an 8 to 10 minute humorous speech. So my speech was called Life Lessons, and it told, it was like anecdotal speech, three different stories in my life, kindergarten, sixth grade, and then my senior year was when this was, and they were things that were going to send me on my way to college. They're valuable lessons learned. The lessons were keep your hands to yourself, never enter into a business proposition with a homeless person, and don't stand on urinals.
Those are all good life lessons.
They're good.
Yeah. I inadvertently in the South entered into on the streets of New Orleans one night while I was drinking pretty heavily. Here's a good reason not to drink. And a guy came up to me and he said, hey, I'm on I bet you $20 I can tell you where you got your shoes. And I was like, really? All right. And he goes, on your feet?
Oh.
Fuck. I gave him the $20. I was like, fuck, I'm not going to be a jerk. Like, I mean, I complained and I was mad at myself.
That was clever.
And I told him he was a genius.
I'm sure he came up with it, yeah. Too. That's clever. I like it. Well, I mean, you know, you got to have a good shtick.
Yeah, you got to have good life lessons.
I'm all about, well, I mean, I was going back to the homeless guy. I mean, he deserved the money. But yeah, like, you know, it's funny. My story about the homeless person is from New Orleans as well.
Those guys, they're wildly in New Orleans.
Well, they're very street savvy in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Indeed.
You go down there a lot?
Yeah.
You like it? You play there?
Well, you know, matter of fact, I haven't done any gigging there, but I've been going since I was a kid. I had family in Mandeville, and then growing up, my friend's dad had a house on Dauphine Street.
Right.
We called it the Gaberhood. It was like,
yeah.
If you go all the way to the end of Bourbon Street, straight over there, it's like it runs parallel. But it was nuts, man. They would let us go down there and stay by ourselves from the time I was like 16. We would always go. We were into this band, Widespread Panic, and they would play at Uno Lakefront Arena every Halloween. So we went to all those, and we'd stay at that house. So Halloween in New Orleans, dude. Unchaperoned. That was, but yeah, I love New Orleans, and still too. I last time I went there, I went with some friends from high school, and we rented a house over there next to Louis Armstrong Park. That's been probably 2 years. Was the last time I went, but
yeah.
I mean, I've had a myriad of experiences in New Orleans. There. I've been in OPP, Orleans Parish Prison.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, just like what, 24 hours.
What did you do?
I got arrested in Harris Casino. I was 19, so I was underage in a casino, and then I had a pocket full of mushrooms, which is a felony. But I got out. No felonies on this guy.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
It's good to know. Well, let's go back. Let's go back to high school when you started the Crooked Blue Band at age 15.
Okay.
And you guys were a hardworking band, and you played school dances, parties, bar mitzvahs. I can't imagine many fucking bar mitzvahs in Montgomery, Alabama. Dude. Like, how many Jews are there?
Are you kidding me?
Seriously?
Well,
are you kidding me? Like, is this
that? I mean, matter of fact, one of my best friends still, Drew Wheel. I used to go to, when I would spend the night with him, I would go to synagogue with him.
Oh, yeah? They've got some temples out there?
Oh, yeah, man.
I mean, I'm sure they do, but...
Dude, I mean, let's be frank. I went to, like,
you did meet up with them. Right. You weren't out in, like, the rural area.
Montgomery's the capital. I mean, it's not, like, a real happening city by any means, but... It's
they have beautiful beaches in Alabama.
Absolutely.
I'm going to tell you the truth. That's some of the most beautiful beaches in the country.
Yeah, most people don't know that there's a coast in Alabama.
No, gorgeous coast.
Yeah, Orange Beach, Gulf Shores, white, sandy beaches.
Gulf Shores, that's the jam.
Yeah, no rocks on the beaches, man. All white, sandy beaches.
White sand, beautiful water, mm-hmm. Very clear.
Now they got that festival down there they're doing. Everybody knows about it, the Hangout Fest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So wait, let's go to the Crooked Blue Band. You're 15. You start this band. You guys were making money then. If you were playing parties and playing bar mitzvahs,
you guys
were in the zone. What were you playing? Like, obviously blues music.
Yeah.
What'd you play?
In the band, I played guitar and sang.
Okay.
Yeah.
You were the guy.
Well, it was me and this other guy. This guy Philip Sellers, and he sang and played guitar also, so we kind of like switched off.
So what did you cover? Like, what were you listening to? What was the blues thing that you were into at the time? What was it, the mid-90s? That was 90.
This was like...
97?
Yeah.
97, 98?
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember that I got this... I was in about sixth grade, and I'd gotten like... the Nirvana records I had, like, In Utero and Nevermind and Unplugged thing in New York and what, I don't know. Anyway.
So at that point, Kurt was already dead. He's gone.
Yeah, well, I remember being in Nirvana when he died. I remember that happening.
Okay.
But I got, I think I got into Nirvana right around when Nevermind came out, and then I dug back a little bit, and I guess there was, like, Bleach and...
Sure.
And you, anyway,
right.
But yeah, I remember him dying. I remember that happening. And then, So then there was this girl that kind of had a crush on at school. And we used to do this thing where you'd like trade albums. Like,
yeah.
Because it was before like Napster.
Sure.
And so I had heard about the Grateful Dead. And she had heard about Nevermind. So I traded her Nevermind for Skeletons from the Closet, which is just like the Grateful Dead's greatest hits.
Yeah. I think that's what I have.
Yeah. And
that's a good album.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I was never a Dead guy. I always had a hard time with it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah, but we'll go back. So you trade these albums.
So I trade these, and I was hip to the Dead thing, and then right after that, I found out about Dick's Picks, which is the series of concerts that are released by.
How did you find out about that? Then did you? Well, man, the internet was happening.
No, honestly, just some hip cats that were older than me that I wanted to kind of emulate. All had like Acid Bears on their cars and stuff. That was why I really knew, you know, I was like, what is all this about? And they were kicking around hacky sacks. And
did you feel at that time like, okay, here's a community that I can be a part of as well as liking a band and liking their music. There's a whole, you become part of a family.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, everybody's
like-minded always, folks. You can sit down and like talk shows and, oh, do you have a copy of the, you know, 78 Red Rocks show or whatever?
Absolutely. Yeah, well, everybody's always looking for a way to, you know, fit in or just have some people to relate to, sure. You know. It's a crazy world. You got to roll around with somebody. So, I mean, it was a really small, I went to a small school anyway, and I didn't, so I had other outlets for that, but absolutely, and that became a thing for me. I got into the whole jam band scene. I used to go to a bunch of, you know, shows, and absolutely, it is a family.
Yeah.
As far as the influence goes, I was listening to Dead, and I got into Dick's Picks, and then I found out about Pigpen, who was this cat that died early, but he's the original front man for the band, and he was a bluesman, and his father was a disc jockey out in California and played like R&B songs.
Okay, so then you got turned on.
So that's basically, so Pigpen, a lot of his canon was really just old R&B and blues songs, so that, you know, my band you're asking about, we were playing Good Lovin' and... Yeah. Hard to Handle, you know, Midnight Hour. So Midnight Hour's Wilson.
When you're doing Hard to Handle at that point, were you doing the Hard to Handle?
No.
Not Black Hole. No, you were doing
Otis. Big Otis Redding
fan. Yeah, okay.
But what we really, to be, you know, candid, is we were doing the Grateful Dead arrangement.
Okay.
But I subsequently got hip to Otis Redding. I already knew about Otis Redding, but then I really dug into it. And Wilson Pickett, and then Pig was doing Jimmy Reed.
Yeah.
He was doing Muddy Waters. Yeah. And there was just, I just got to, kept searching back.
And that resonated with you because now, I mean, you still are in an offshoot. I mean, you play in a Grateful Dead cover band. You play Pigpen, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty cool.
I know. That wasn't something I thought of. That just kind of fell,
I mean, that's
my
for
life.
Fun. You do it. You probably make a little bread when you do it too, which is
nice. Yeah. It's not.
Or they pay you in acid and mushrooms.
No, sir.
Space cakes or whatever. I mean, but you also, the music that you write comes again from that Southern gospel, blues, and country a combination that happened down there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, yeah. I mean, even from my hometown, man, Eddie Floyd is from Montgomery. He's a big Stax artist. Knock on wood.
Yeah, of course.
And Clarence Carter. And then like from Tuskegee, all the Commodores are from Tuskegee.
Oh,
that's
yeah?
where they came out of. Yep.
Did you see that Lionel Richie is headlining the ACL festival?
No, he released a country record. I wonder if he's going to do the country material. He just did.
I don't think you can headline. I don't think you can go and be line. You know what I mean? He's going to have to do the whole thing. He's going to have to be dancing on the ceiling.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It'll be, yeah.
You know what's weird is I'm trying to get my head around that and trying to figure out, do we live in a society that has gotten so into irony that like it's this big joke that he's headlining it? You know what I mean? Like, is that really a viable thing? Like, hey, let's get Lionel Richie to headline this thing. It just seems funny to me. And it seems funny in like a weird way. Like, it's like Depeche Mode, The Cure, Phoenix, Lionel Richie. That's just...
Dude, I mean, all those together, I could laugh equally at all those by themselves or together.
That's true.
Like, and why are we now?
Do you laugh at all those bands?
Well,
that's not your scene.
In different, different ways for different things. I mean, not to say that I'm not into any of those bands. No, to be,
I don't see you sitting around listening.
Honestly, I don't know what Phoenix is.
Right.
I don't know anything.
They're
about
French.
That. I'm just gonna. One of my favorite. I'm just gonna assume that I won't like it.
Yeah. I could see that.
I just, I'm a purist, man. I like organic music. I don't like, you know, you mentioned, it's funny earlier you mentioned Pro Tools, which that's a, well, that's it. I almost wanted to say that then because I like audio a lot, but I figured, but like, okay, this is an interesting thing because I am a purist when it comes to sounds and music, but I also understand that it can be helpful to use technology to your advantage. Sure. So Pro Tools, I'm not opposed to, you know, because
but what some people do with it.
With Pro Tools, yes, because Pro Tools is like opening Pandora's box. You could, there's so much down in there that, and there's right. some there's a little evil that could escape. People rely on Pro Tools for auto tune
too much
things that don't make them to make them sound different because. Yeah. Perhaps they can't do it correctly, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas I just use it as a way to record,
yeah.
you know, fast, and but still we just don't.
How did you start out with recording? Did you have like a 4-track or something?
Yeah.
Yeah? What 4-track? Cassette?
I had like a...
Digital?
Korg digital 4-track okay. that took memory cards.
Okay.
It had like a, it had inputs, and it also had like this little condenser mic that was built into uh-huh. it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just... What I would do is I would just sit.
So you started when you first recorded. It was digital. It was a total.
Yeah, it was 4.
I'm just saying, guys. I mean, I'm like
it's a generational thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like 15 years older than you. So when I started, it was these 4-tracks, you know, cassettes.
Yeah.
And shit.
But I mean, I worked on those, but as far as when I got my own device, that was what I got was a digital 4-track.
Well, it's just interesting to see someone that is a purist and listens probably almost exclusively to only records that were made on tape, right?
Yeah.
But that came into this thing when digital had already become a mass consumer
absolutely.
Product.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, that is. You know, and that's...
Did you do a lot of weird shit? Like, how did you use that 4-track? Did you start doing shit on your own like I do in here? Like, playing all the shit and...
Yeah, I would just, like, lay down a guitar track, and then I would usually do another guitar track, and then vocals, and then maybe experiment, do vocals and percussion at the same time. I started picking up the harmonica, and I would mess with the harmonica or whatever. You know, I got a bass, and I would do that. Keyboards, just whatever, man. Then, when I started messing around with that 4-track a lot, that was when I was in college already. And then this cat...
When you were in college, that's here, right?
No. That was in Alabama.
Okay, so you went to school in Alabama, and then you were studying English, right? That's what you're saying?
I got a degree in political science.
Okay,
a minor in journalism. Though.
Okay,
yeah, journalism.
And then you moved here to pursue recording.
Yeah, I did an audio engineering program here in Austin,
and that's what brought you here.
Well,
or no?
No, I mean absolutely. Yeah. That's how I got here. Right. What brought me here was music. Okay. I just
you knew it was a scene here.
Yeah, I just needed a catalyst, and so. Education, you know, I needed something to help my parents help me.
Needed a little something to give that. Like, what's in it for them?
Yeah,
well, what's in it for you is I'm going to get an education.
Yeah, well, I think now my dad thinks it was a ruse because he kept being like, "When are you going to pursue your audio engineering career?" And I just kept being like, "Well, Dad, I'm pursuing music," and so I think he kind of thought like, "Well, why did you even do that?" But it bettered me but I never really wanted to. Be an engineer. I just want to be able to engineer my own stuff, you know, and that's what I do with my record. With my bass player, we engineered it and produced it, mixed and mastered it all ourselves, arranged it. That initially I wasn't going to take on all those responsibilities, but it became money.
Is that the stuff that you sent me?
Uh huh.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds great.
Oh, and it's it a Joe. A great... That's with Joe Beckham, actually. You know Joe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's got a great feel, like it's greasy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Southern music should be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all live, man. We cut the whole the record's 10 tracks, and we did it in 6 days in the studio, recorded, mixed, and mastered in 6 days. And we did, what we do is we would cut it live, drums, bass, 2 guitars, even those guitar solos are live, actually. And then David Jimenez, the doctor. So that was all like me, Joe on bass, David Jimenez doing lead and guitar and playing rhythm, and then three different drummers. Frosty is, Frosty's on is on two of the tracks.
That's a guy you need for that kind of music. Oh, you know what I mean? Oh, that's a great guy for that.
Yeah, Frosty's on there, and then Damon Yanes is on three tracks. And then my buddy Tom, who's actually from Muscle Shoals that I used to play with back in Alabama, he's on four of the tracks. But anyway, so yeah, we did that like that. And then we just, we had a keyboard day, and Trevor Nealon did the keys on all of it. Uh-huh. And he just did that one day. And then we had like, you know, we just did some overdubbing. But yeah, and that was, you know, that was, that's, I mean, and so basically back in the day, if you were on tape, especially when engineering was first coming around, then everything had to be live. Later, people started like Les Paul and stuff. Made some advancements where people found out how to overdub onto tape, but it was still very limited.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, all the early stuff that I'm hip to for sure was just, that's it. If somebody messed up, then you do it again, or you just hope that if the vocals were good, you hope that whatever happened in the music isn't that noticeable.
Yeah. And you're a Leon Russell guy.
I love Leon.
Yeah. Yeah. You, I saw that you had a quote in your Facebook from him.
Like, oh yeah, I've been many
places in my life and time. Yeah,
yeah.
How did you? He's a Southern guy too. He's another guy. From Tulsa. Same in the but he's he's in the thing.
Oh yeah.
He's in that same kind of soulful.
Yeah, well, Tulsa was on. Tulsa had their own thing, the Tulsa Sound. That was like a mixture of kind of rockabilly and rock and roll and R&B, the Tulsa Sound. There's a lot of cats out there, man. Jim Keltner, J.J. Cale, Jamie Oldacre, who lives here in town? Dick Sims.
Todd Wolfson, the guy that painted that in the painting of me and him that he did, but he's a photographer here in town. Also a Jewish guy from Tulsa.
Which he's from Tulsa?
Seemed weird to me. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's always just saying, because I'm from Miami, right? And I, like, lived on Miami Beach. And so, obviously, like, I know the East. To me, Jewish people are from the East Coast and not from the South. That's just, you know what I mean? That's just how it works in my mind. Or L.A.
Jewish people are entrepreneurs, man.
Yeah, entrepreneurs.
So
when you moved here, what did you start doing? What was the band when you were going to school? Did you meet guys at school, or how did you meet guys? You put ad in the paper, Craigslist? That shit?
I did some Craigslist.
Did you?
I didn't put ads out, but I responded to some.
Was that weird?
I love people, so I feel like you can only make a situation awkward if you're going to be awkward about it. You know, if you just roll with the punches, it's whatever.
I should live by that.
Well, sorry. I was a door-to-door salesman, man. That's how you get used to doing that.
Yeah, wait, let's go back to that. Because you were door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman for 10 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
See, I read that thing.
Yeah, you did.
Okay. Was it Hoover?
Kirby.
Kirby. That's a classic brand. So you were like is there like a training day where you go in and you watch films and it's like... When the person answers the door, simply tell them, hello, I am here to sell you a vacuum. You know what I mean? How do you do that?
Well.
How is that? I didn't even think that was a real thing since like the 90s or something, or 80s. Like,
dude, Kirby vacuums, 100 years strong, Kirby vacuums have only been sold door to door. So that's the only way you're going to come across Kirby, unless you get one on the internet. But you ain't going to get a warranty with that, Jack.
So tell me about this. So you go, how did you end up? Did you answer an ad or something?
Yeah,
to get that job?
Yeah. Well, it is interesting you asked about the training, because you answer an ad in the paper, but it's very vague about what you'll be doing. I think it said like home maintenance setup or something. And even when you go through the interview, that still, you don't know till you get to the class.
Right. But I think about you also, like, you walk around with like a potted plant, and then you dump it on the ground, like, it'll clean it right up. You know what I mean? Like, that's all that means. Sorry.
There's some interesting, there's definitely...
So sorry. Tell me about this. This is going to be good.
Oh, man, there's so many things. I used to, like, mess with my friends about it all the time. We'd be out drinking, and they'd be like, Kurt, sell this guy a vacuum cleaner. And I'm like, dude, I could do it, man. I mean, I could sell you a Kirby right now. Because I believe in it. See, that's the thing. People would be like, didn't you feel bad like you're ripping people off? Because it's a $2,000 vacuum. And I said, no, because I believe in it starts at $2,000, but you can, you know, I can work with you on that, Johnny. How much money you got in your pocket?
Does it have that Dyson technology now?
Dude, Dyson. Okay. Dyson is sold in the stores. Dysons are like $600, the cheapest Dyson you probably get. But they're made out of plastic, man. Yeah. A Kirby's made out of die-cast aluminum, okay? It's made to last. Plastic things you throw away. And a Dyson has a quarter horsepower engine. A Kirby has a 2-horsepower engine. That's 8 times more powerful. Any vac on the market is only going to have a quarter horsepower. And the thing about a Dyson is it's just a push vacuum, whereas the Kirby is a home maintenance system. It's got the canister vac. You can clean your bed with it. You can shampoo your carpet. I get you a hardwood floor attachment. You can clean your hardwood floors. You can do floor-to-ceiling maintenance of your home. You can't get that with a Dyson. You want me to continue?
No. You can stop. This is. I think that this is possibly one of the best moments on my podcast of all time. I'm literally being sold a vacuum.
Well, let me ask you this, Johnny. Do you have good credit?
No, but look, you also have a Stacks tattoo?
Yeah.
Holy shit. So tell me about, so you go into the training and they what? They brainwash you, obviously. It's like you drank the Kool-Aid.
No. I mean.
What happens when you go in the training? Do you watch a film? Is it an old film that shows you a 50s guy, like a Willie Loman kind of guy?
I wish, dude. I wish. Death of a Salesman.
Yeah.
It was just like, well, actually, you know what it reminded me of really is that Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah.
Because all that ABC Always Be Closing. And so all little, that, yeah, all that was in there.
Did you have like a direct boss that handled like a crew of people that would go disperse into a neighborhood and would they drop you guys off? I had a job like that for one day when I was like 18.
Okay. Yeah. You dig it. But thing that's cool, the reason I stayed is because I excelled at this. To be honest, my contemporaries were, anyway, you can imagine what kind of people respond to those ads. Right. But so, yeah, I was like, they're like, damn, we need to, this guy is, he has potential.
Yeah.
And, I was like a crew leader or a manager. So yeah, I took my ride out and I'd have like 4 dealers or salesmen or whatever, 4 to 6, depending on how big of a van I had on the day. And then I had a canvasser, which is usually a pretty girl. I use that loosely, that term pretty.
Right. Yeah. Pretty for a vacuum, the door-to-door vacuum cleaner sales.
For a door-to-door vacuum cleaner.
This is going to sound horrible, but one time I went to like music lab or something and someone came in and there was all these guys talking. They were friends of mine and I was like, hey, what's up, guys? They're like, oh, you got to go to the... you got to go to this gas station over here. It's got the hottest girl working there. I mean, for like a girl at a gas station
context.
So, yeah, so these girls
the context
are good looking.
Yeah.
Framed it as a door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman for Kirby in the 2000s.
In Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Okay. And we were traveling. We were regional circuit there.
So it was like a whole involved. How long?
Dude,
obviously, you excelled fast. How long did it take you to get from just door to door guy to up above the next level, the crew chief, so to speak?
I don't know, a month or something. Basically, they just give you these incentives. That's the way the whole company works. And people think that it's like a pyramid scam or something, but it's really not. It's a legitimate business. Warren Buffett actually owns the business, but it's set up so anybody can run their own business. So basically, there's just all these quotas you have to meet, and as fast as you meet them, you can move up. And if I wanted to, after you've been a crew leader for 3 months, if you meet the sales quotas, then you can branch out and start your own store do a franchise under the person you work under, and you get vacuums from them, and you have to do that for
But in a pyramid way, they'll get a cut off of your store?
So at first, yeah, you're the person that your mentor will just for like the 6 months till you get going, and then boom, you're on your own.
Somebody somewhere is listening to this podcast going like, seriously, you guys are spending this much time talking about this?
Yeah, right. I don't know.
Dude, people make millions.
I got a free trip to Jamaica within 3 months, everything paid, like all inclusive resort in Ocho Rio, like right on the coast. They have all these great things, man, that you can get.
How do you like Jamaica?
Oh, it was great, dude. Yeah. I hung out with these Rastas. Like, you go out to the edge of the resort on the beach, and all the Rastas were out there hanging out, man. I just went there every day.
Did you hook up? Or did you get, like, a guy?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you get a guy, and you kind of, like, dude. He looks out for you.
Oh, yeah.
I had a guy that, like, one day I was just, it was my ex-wife and I, we were like, you know, take us to fucking, like, take us to Europe. Like, this isn't working for me.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to another place called Jamaica Me Crazy. You know yeah. what I mean? Like, oh, take yeah. me, what's your little part of town like? And he was like, all right, well, come on. Nobody talked to us. But he would run up and get us food at these places with the fish with the head still on it and the eyes in yeah. it and stuff, like the real deal, good stuff.
Well, they won't talk to you because you were with him, but if you hadn't been with him, you would have had a couple folks.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, people just look at Westerners as money signs there, you know? Sure. Everybody just wants to latch onto yeah. you and make a little money.
Yeah.
But you probably had a good guy with you. That's why they weren't fucking yeah. with you.
Yeah, I remember. He was a nice guy.
But
so
you
had a good time?
Yeah, yeah, that was a blast. And it was, you know, we just had to do like this little thing where it was, we went to like one meeting or whatever. So it was considered, so it was like a Kirby convention. Okay. So I was with yeah. like 1,000 other people from out of the country. That
did you look like this when you
were no,
because
no.
that would have been badass. Like
that
like
never, it would Kirby not, it would not have worked. There's no way I would have gotten in yeah. any doors. Cause I had to canvas also. I did, my dealers would be in the car. So I knocked on doors all and got my dealers in and then.
Oh, hear? So that's what the canvasser goes ahead, kind
the
of
canvasser
a
gets
recon
you
guy. He's like, hey, there's yeah. going to be a guy coming by in a little while.
Yeah, so my boss was a hard ass. He would make everybody knock, but people don't want to knock and then do an hour presentation, because once you got in, you had to show it off for an hour at least, and then you would call
at
him.
At least?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a long time to go into.
I know,
house,
people.
You're just pushing them.
Well, no, like, no. See, so that's the thing is, the first person, this is what I do. All right, here it is, Johnny.
Yeah.
I'm just going to, if I'm in your neighborhood, I would knock on the door.
All right.
And I would carry on a Glade air freshener. This was how we did our pitch. Okay. So, you want to try it on you?
Sure.
All right. Knock, knock.
Yes.
Hey, sir. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Great. We're going around your neighborhood. We're handing out these air fresheners to all the happy people. You happy today, sir?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Take this. Yeah. Along with that, we're offering a free carpet cleaning. Hold on 1 second. Let me go get my guy.
Okay.
And then I run, come with my guy. Here, come on right in. Let me see your heaviest area of traffic in the house.
Okay, it's right here in the doorway.
In the doorway, yeah. Exactly. Okay, John over here, he's going to get set up. Yeah. Now, what I want to do is I want to look down here. And so I'm already in your house. Boom, we're on the thing. So I'm telling him, while I'm talking to him, my guy's setting up his little station, right? And then when I just joke with the guy. I say, hey, man, this is Johnny. You know, you're Johnny, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
This is John.
This is John, yeah.
Johnny, this is John. Y'all are going to get along hey. Great.
Well, we have the same name.
Yeah, well, ain't that something? So John here is trying to work his way through college, and what he's going to do is he's going to clean for you. You're going to get a free house cleaning, Johnny, but I want you to do me one favor. Make sure you work him real hard now. And okay. When he gets done, he's going to call me, and I'll come back. I'll check on his work, and then we'll make sure he gets paid for today. It won't cost you a penny.
Right.
And so then I leave, and the guy does his thing, and I keep getting more guys in.
You're like his pimp.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm part of the smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
So he gets in there, and this person thinks they're getting a free home cleaning, so they're, and they are. I mean, the guy's cleaning. Well, they have these little dirt meters. It's a clear thing. You put a pad in it, and you're only supposed to run the vacuum for 3 seconds, and then dirt goes on the pad, and they're white pads. You can see the dirt. Uh-huh. So the model for the setup in the home is the person, you got to clean everything, carpet, couch, drapes. There's a bedroom thing you do where you put black paints in, you pull the dust mites out, and you're supposed to get 100 pads and cover their house or home with the pads. So then the person's sitting in their comfort zone of their house, and they're just surrounded by this dirt
right.
and they know it all came from their stuff. And then that's when they call me to check on their work. And then that's when I pitch them and I try to close them.
Okay.
So that was it. You know.
Wow. So what is it? What? So then you get a percentage of it?
Oh yeah, dude. Okay. I could make.
What does the house cleaning guy get a little less than you?
Well, I'm not going to break down into the cost
whatever
system, yeah. but I will tell you how much profit there is to be made. I could make up to $350 per vacuum I sold off my truck. And the least I would make if I like did a crazy deal would be like $100. And my best week in business, I sold 14 off my truck.
Holy shit, so, man.
Dude, and this cat, you get paid at the end of every week, man. Cash. I mean, you get a check, but like the government, you report your taxes on your own.
Right,
so I got 100% of my sales, and then I reported mine with a accountant.
So were you playing music during that time too?
Yeah. Well, matter of fact, when I started selling vacuums, dude, I was crazy busy in that. Like, we worked 6, sometimes 7 days a week, and we were traveling salesmen, you know, because you can't work. Tuscaloosa's real small. You can't work there every day. So this was the exciting part. We'd wake up every day, we'd go to work, you get there at 8, and you have, like, a sales meeting. I know we got there at 7:30. But anyway, we had a sales meeting at 8, and we talk about the sales from the day before, acknowledge people, and then we'd break at, like...
Bye. you know, hey, Steve, broke that. He's number one this week. Someone's better catch up to Steve. You guys want to really get that Jamaica trip
exactly.
going.
Exactly. Yeah, you got it. Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
Coffee's for closers.
Exactly.
See, this watch costs more than your house.
Yeah.
Right?
Dave, you haven't had a sale all week, man. Someone's got to help Dave out here. Steve, why don't you give him a couple of your sales there, man? Steve's got some to spare, Dave. Come on.
Yeah.
Okay.
So a little motivation routine. And, and they'd let people tell the story of how they closed the sale, too. Yeah. This is how we closed that one. Yeah. But anyway.
That guy did want a vacuum cleaner, but by the time I fucking left, that guy was vacuuming his house with my cock.
Yeah. Well, maybe that was your story, Johnny. That might be go back to the porn tapes. I don't know. but then what the cool part was that the managers, crew leaders would go into the owner's office and we'd pull out a map and everybody would be like, I'd just pick a town I didn't know anything about. Like, I've never been to this town. It's a small town. I'm going there today. And I'd just drive into the town and we'd go anywhere. Sometimes, 3 hours. I've gone as far as we went to Hattiesburg, Mississippi and all over Mississippi and Alabama, pretty much is what we did. But yeah, man, 3-4 hours away sometimes, and then just go to a neighborhood that looks right and just start knocking on doors.
Yeah.
And you learn a lot about how to deal with people, especially just regular people.
Yeah.
And then to convince somebody to let you in their house takes trust, and you got to go through a lot of no's and door-to-door sales. Cause we would knock all day long. I might go through 300-400 houses in a day and then only put on 7 presentations,
Yeah.
So it just
got you ready for the big music business.
Oh, Jack.
To get turned down.
And then what's crazy is the biggest thing, the slogan for Kirby is "We're positive." And it sounds corny, but when you answer the phone, you have to do that. "We're positive." That's how you answer the phone. Mm-hmm. And that's what I always say, but it's so true, man.
That's why you're like, "Are you happy today? Hey, whatever happened to my fucking bottle of Glade? Did you end up giving it to him or did they just forget
you get to
about
keep
it
that
with all that
shit?
Shit?
You keep it.
Okay.
Yeah. But not if you don't let me in.
Right. So you moved here, you did the recording thing, and you have not, outside of doing your own stuff, you haven't been hired out as an engineer or produced anybody else's records?
No, I haven't. Matter of fact, after doing this, I realized, man, I could really produce somebody's, I could be a valuable asset as a producer.
Yeah, I bet you could be.
Yeah, I didn't.
And also, just with your ability to even, judge a performance, which is a huge producer's job.
You know,
especially when you record an entire performance in itself, and that's how you do your thing.
Yeah.
So tell me about King Corduroy. Where are you guys at right now with your thing? You have an album out?
Yeah.
One
record, album, not on vinyl yet, but hopefully.
Looking to put that album on vinyl?
I paid for everything on my own to do it. I tried to do a Kickstarter, it didn't work. So
I don't mean to laugh, but that sounds terrible. it didn't fill out? You didn't fill out the thing?
Kickstarter, I should ask for less money. My goal was 7,000 and I got to 2,000.
You know what, buddy? I have a thing, theory about that, and I've been watching it and I've talked to a shitload of people in that chair. Ask for more. The person that asked, I know that asked for the most, 50 grand, got 70 grand.
Oh, dude, I don't know. I don't have enough people to facilitate that.
Oh.
I mean, that's just really
Kickstarter. I don't know if she does. Or she did. Then.
I don't know. I mean, that's the other thing about it is, okay, it takes, you have to be social media savvy, right? And I'm not, I mean, part of it, is probably laziness, but I didn't have a computer forever. Somebody just hooked me, old Dan the man hooked me up with a computer, but I haven't had a computer for a while because my MacBook died a couple years ago and I haven't been able to fix it. So I'm always doing stuff on the internet, on my iPhone, or having to go to the public library and wait on the homeless guy that's watching his movie to be done.
Yeah.
which is it's all right. It's really, really near my house, but sometimes I don't feel like that.
Yeah.
Especially to go do something I didn't want to do in the first place. But yeah, so with the Kickstarter thing, dude, you have to hammer that home on.
Oh, you got to push it.
And yeah. I don't, that's not me, Jack. I don't do, I don't.
My friend made it just yesterday. You know Will Knack? You know Will? He played with us that night at Anton's. We did that show together.
Yeah.
He just came in under the wire. He had like $98 to go like yesterday afternoon.
Wow.
And I think today is the end of the thing. So he just barely made it.
Well,
it's tough.
Yeah.
And you do have to push it.
Yeah.
And you know.
And I did my campaign and I went on the road. Yeah. So like the whole time the campaign was going on, I wasn't even like, you know, checking, like I remember
promoting it, and you got to keep that going in people's faces.
Yeah. Like the first couple days I did it by the second day I had $1,000, and I really like bugged a bunch of people, and I was like, man, I don't really like bugging people about this. I was like, it's in the ether. I'm just going to leave it.
Yeah.
And then the whole month went by and I only got 1,000 more, you know? So
what would your friends at Kirby Vacuum say? They'd be upset. They'd be upset with that.
Yeah. Well, I called my old boss. Actually, he didn't put anything towards it.
So you have one record out. You can get it on iTunes. You can get it on your web. Do you have a website? How do people find King Corduroy?
Dude,
to find what's going on?
I got to put it on iTunes. It's not on iTunes.
Did I just remind you or something?
Yeah, that's what that was. It's on my list of to-do things. Things to do.
Well,
to do
good. Things. I'm glad that you chose this. I've got to tell you, Kurt, I have enjoyed this so far.
Yeah,
I really have. I love the whole Kirby vacuum cleaner thing. And I feel bad because I don't know if people subscribe to this podcast to find that out. But to me, that's like a real slice of life that's gone, because you don't really know. There's no door-to-door salesman. That was a real viable experience. And it adds to our skills, our business skills, on stage skills, all
Absolutely.
That kind of stuff. Like, you go do something like that even for 10 months, and you've put some time under your belt on stage, so to speak, selling something, which is what we're always trying to do.
Yeah. Well,
you like those vapor cigarettes? You a fan?
It's oil.
Okay. A vapor. Okay. Yeah. You don't have to say it. We don't all have to go. Like, there's a thing. I'll try something. Seriously, the DA is on one day, and the next day I'm like, yeah. Anyway, so yeah, it's pretty good. Interesting. I had one of those on another podcast I was on, kind of like that.
Yeah.
Somebody famous is going to start selling those. Someone was telling me. Anyway, let's go back. Let's go. Let's go back.
Let's digress.
How do people find you?
Okay, so
you got a Facebook page or something?
Man, yeah, I got a Facebook page. There's like 100 people that like the band. It's pretty sad.
Sure, I have a hard time getting my numbers up on that.
I haven't done the thing. It's like suggested to people. I don't want to say, hey, I don't want to be like tap somebody in the back and be like, you like my band, right?
Yeah.
Like, I figure they'll just find it if they want to.
Hopefully some people that are listening to this will get into it.
Maybe.
You know?
I got a reverb.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know. They're still listening through the thing.
Yeah, they're probably like, yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to be a little ambivalent about the whole thing because it started to get on my nerves a little while back. So I'm just trying to...
What was getting on your nerves? Social media and having to promote and having to do this whole fucking song and dance thing that we're always having to do now?
Yeah. Well, that, and then furthermore, I mean, honestly, dude, I feel like the internet and social media and all this, it really is... It's a smoke and mirrors, man. Just like
it is, it totally is.
And people can create this false image of themselves, like
sure.
they're really big artists and everybody knows about them. When in reality, no, they might not even play any shows. You know,
yeah.
But they're, you know, and it's
no,
like
it's,
I don't know. I mean, I
the
came
society
to
society we live in.
Yeah,
that,
dude.
Kind of the...
So I mean, I came to Austin to play music, and I go out and I play music every night.
Right.
And that's what I can do to better myself as a musician. And I don't really want to go online and tell all these people to like me and all that. Like, I feel
like... But
that's
all part of the gig now.
I know. That's why I'm 100 people like my band.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, but you're doing things. You're going on a podcast, which definitely, like, people that listen to stuff like this are people that are, like, social media people that already are kind of in that thing. So maybe you can find... I know some people that have businesses where they help bands with social media. I don't know if you have to give them a percentage of your gig money or something. I don't know. I don't know how stuff works sometimes. But King Corduroy is out playing, and look it up.
Well, so, I haven't been getting a lot of, I've been doing these tribute shows that have been getting great turnouts. We did, like, the Mad Dogs and Englishmen last, done Exile on Main Street, and we just do, like, a record or whatever. But
and who, you guys do it yourselves, or do guest people come in and do it? It's like a whole thing.
No, yeah, it's not like a hoot night, where
okay,
it's just
okay,
like
okay.
A band.
Okay.
And then we have, but we'll have different frontmen come out to help get people out, you know?
Sure.
So we can put a bunch of bands on the poster, but, and I, you know, I should specify that King Corduroy is, I mean, it's a rotating cast of characters. The record is
You're
all
the guy.
Yeah, I mean, and the record is all Joe Beckham on bass and David Jimenez on guitar and Trevor Nealon on keys, you know, and Damon Giannis is the drummer on most of it, and that's like who King Corduroy would be every show if they all weren't so great and busy with other stuff, you sure. know. But they all have commitments other than, you know, the money ain't there for my band, so I would never ask. I want to play with the best cats in town. I understand they got to make their money. And I also understand that you can't ask somebody to fully commit to you if you don't have the money there. So one day, you know, I'll have a full King Corduroy will be a real band. But I mean, in reality right now, it's just like, you know, I wrote all the songs and then I got my friends together
but
and we made the record.
You can get and do it. And when you pull it off, it comes off great.
Oh no. I told a guy this the other day, I was talking with my buddy, Rob Patterson, but anyway, and I told him
the writer.
Yeah. He's far out, dude. Man, I like Rob. Yeah. I gave him a copy of the record to see if he'd because I have another band that I used to have, Washita, and we never got to that. We were talking about my first band, but he reviewed that record. That's on iTunes, Washita.
Okay.
But anyway, he reviewed that record and he liked it, so I hit him up when I made this record. I did all the PR on my own, dude. I got one to Jim Caligiuri, got one to Peter Mongolo at the Statesman. Got one. I sent one to 11 different DJs at KUT. I wrote a personal note to all of them. And then, I don't know, but I gave one to Jesse Scott over there at KDRP. And I don't know, I've been hustling, you know, just been trying to get out there. Dude, I got one to David Frick from Rolling Stone.
Oh, no way.
He was on KUT on Sunday, the Sunday of South By, and he did like a two-hour show about the Beatles with Jody Denberg. So I went and waited outside the KUT for like an hour. And then when he came out, I approached him and gave him my record. He was really nice.
Lost Ramon.
Yes, exactly. People, I got so excited. I tried to tell people, they're like, who's David Frick? And I was like, God, how do you not know? And I was like, well, he looks like one of the Ramones, dude. I used to tell people that.
Yeah, if you don't know his name, but you spend any time ever reading anything about music or anything like Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or like really big, huge band, I mean, he really is the guy. Yeah. I had a show once with this band, Gowdy, during South by Southwest. And our show was a full show, was a big thing. And he was stuck outside and couldn't get in. And I remember we looked into each other's eyes when I was turned around to the drummer and I saw him through the glass there at Maggie Mae's. And he looked at me and I looked at him. And for the rest of the show, I was like, wow, if anything, I just looked into David Frick's eyes and he looked into mine. And I wonder what he was thinking, like,
it's
another
dude.
Fucking guy with a guitar. Eat a cheeseburger, fucker. No.
But he wanted in your show and he couldn't get in. That's something.
Yeah.
I'm the guy hounding him when he's coming off the radio.
No. No. I doubt he was like disappointed in any way. We were just a band that were. I think you were supposed to see us that day.
Yeah, he's come to South By every year since the first year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I told him that actually when I met him. I said, hey, man, I really appreciate you coming to South By every year. And he goes, well, actually, my middle name is Austin, so I think my parents foresaw that I would like this town. That's pretty cool. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that is cool. I never knew that. Now we know his middle name. Uh-huh. I'm going to always refer to him as David Austin Frick.
David Austin Frick. It sounds very regal.
So then tell me about Cactus Fuzz.
Cactus Fuzz is it's with my buddy Will Webster and Joe Beckham from Wise Bird.
Mm-hmm.
And we like country music, man, but their band has always been like southern rock, kind of rock and roll thing, and I've always done more of the blues kind of soul thing.
Sure.
But I love writing country songs, man. And so, yeah, we actually have a record like done. We have all the songs recorded. We just got to like mix it and do a little overdubbing because like it's all cut live, but we did one. We did a session actually at Bismo for part of the record. We did we did four songs there, but it's just all live acoustic guitar, bass, drums, and electric guitar. We got to overdub some fiddle and pedal steel.
Yeah.
But yeah, dude, we got Eric Kokanen is on some of the record.
I like him.
Yeah, man, it's happening. We got some cool songs recorded. I want to do that. Actually, my goal was to release a Cactus Fuzz record in the fall.
Okay, so you're going to try and do that. You got most of it done?
Yeah, dude.
You're
you
got to get that album. You got to get King Corduroy on iTunes.
See, I should really focus on King Corduroy's thing. I don't even... Yeah. Yeah, I need to put it on iTunes, dude. I was thinking about doing
it. They can get it at Waterloo if they live in Austin?
Yes, please tell somebody to go to Waterloo and buy it.
I tell people to go to Waterloo all the time. But what if they don't live in Austin?
Then I need to do the iTunes thing.
Yeah, you're going to need to. Okay.
I heard about Bandcamp. Maybe I should try that out.
Yeah, Bandcamp.
What do you think about that?
Liars and Saints, we had a release on Bandcamp.
That was fortuitous.
Yeah, that was fortuitous. Man, we made about $8 or something, $9. I don't know, something.
Wow.
A lot.
You go down to Pete Terry's with that, get you a good old meal and a cookie. Yeah.
Well, what do you eat when you go to Pete Terry's? That's a burger place.
Nothing. Number five.
Is that a veggie
all
burger?
The way, onions and pickles and a large Dr. Pepper. Yeah, that's a veggie burger.
Nice. So then you also have King Biscuit Blues Review,
mm-hmm.
and that's cover songs, old blues songs, or songs you've written.
I'd call them standards, Johnny.
Standards, thank you. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we just play old blues stuff. Sometimes some blues songs maybe I've written, but we just play the blues, man.
What? Well, give me a couple songs.
Do
you have a regular gig? That seems like a band that should have a regular gig, like Tuesdays.
We have, man, dude. I do all my own booking. And I've kind of been slacking off. My calendar's not looking great. I'll be at the Driscoll tonight and on Friday.
Oh, no one will. They don't know what that means. This will be coming out like in a couple weeks.
Okay.
Sorry.
It doesn't matter. That's just nobody listens at the Driscoll. It pays good, though. Pays well.
It's a good gig. I mean, I've seen fucking guys from Fastball in there doing stuff. And
like, I like that guy. Really I like cool.
Miles or Tony.
Miles Zuniga. Yeah, he's Miles funny, Zuniga. Man. Yeah.
Very funny.
He's really like, yeah. Yeah, it's like a dry sense of humor, but that's totally right up my alley.
Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too. You know what's funny is, remember the other day I saw you gave me a ride when I was walking down to the comedy festival?
Mm-hmm.
That's last year. That's who I was with at the thing.
Oh, really?
And we even stood in line together to get our picture taken with our favorite comic.
That was probably like standing in line with Woody Allen.
Yeah. No, we get along really well. I like Miles. He was on here. He did. We had a great show.
Oh, that's great cool. I'll have to listen to that.
Yeah.
No, I just always... Sorry, I was... Never mind.
How are you going to listen to it if you're not on the internet?
I got a computer now.
Oh, yeah, you do. Sorry.
Literally, like 2 days ago, Dan the Man hooked me up with
the
computer.
Who is Dan the Man?
Oh, man, he's
like... You know what? It seems like a guy that I met backstage a couple weeks ago at Willie's birthday concert.
Probably.
Which, by the way, everyone looks exactly like you at 80.
I wish I had been
there.
At
the show, yeah.
At the backyard, yeah.
The backyard.
Paul and Lucas, yeah.
Are you friends with him?
Benefit. No. Oh. I've never met him. I just heard about it.
Paul's fantastic, man. And Lucas is great. I don't know him, but I know Paula. That's why I went. She was on here, too. And I'm a huge
that's
fan
cool.
of her. She's a cool...
I listened to her Highway 290. She has a...
Yeah, she's got a great show.
Yeah.
You need to get her some music. She played my music a couple weeks ago.
That'd be awesome,
played one of my jams.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Jess Scott hasn't played my stuff. I should give it to her. I've never met her. Does she still play at the Saxon? She used to have a regular thing at the Saxon.
She did. She doesn't anymore. Right now, I think tonight she's in Kalamazoo, Michigan with her dad, opening for her dad.
Far out, man. That's cool.
Yeah, they do a lot of touring together.
Kalamazoo.
And so King Biscuit Blues Review, you don't have any gigs? Or is that what's playing at the Driscoll?
No, that'll just be me by myself.
You play?
No.
You usually play the piano there too? Use the piano? Utilize the...
You know, I would if they would unlock it. I've never asked.
They'll unlock it for you. They unlocked it for Miles when I saw them.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I should totally ask him. Thank you for reminding me. I'll have him do that tonight.
Yeah. Dude, this has been a great day for you. Like, it might need to go on iTunes. You got to get on Twitter, probably.
I'm on Twitter. I got Twitter and Instagram, King Corduroy.
Okay. So people can find you at King Corduroy. So say people want to find out where you're playing. Just go to the Twitter, at King Corduroy.
So the King Corduroy, I'm holding out. No more shows for King Corduroy till the CD release party. It's the last Friday in July at Antone's.
Okay.
July 26th. And
what's the name of the album?
Austin Soul Stew.
Okay.
You know that reference?
It's no.
A King Curtis reference. There's a song called Memphis Soul Stew.
Okay.
And
but
so,
you're in Austin.
Right. We're in Austin. King Curtis is from Fort Worth, so that's one of the reasons why it's good. Then King, like that's kind of one of the reasons I want to use King. King Curtis is my favorite sax player. And then Stax is my jams, obviously. And
got a Stax tattoo. That's a great tattoo.
That's good. All my stuff's music. All my tattoos are. But anyway, so King Curtis did a song about the Memphis sound, but Stax got purchased by Atlantic. Atlantic blew up Stax, and then Jerry Wexler actually fucked him in the end, or made a savvy business move. But anyway, point being, it was like, I guess it got more expensive to record at Stax, and there was a lot going on. There's this other studio in Memphis, Universal or American, I want to say. I should know that word on a podcast. I think it's American. But anyway, like Dusty Springfield recorded Son of a Preacher Man there.
Right. Dusty in Memphis. there.
Yeah, Dusty Memphis. So the song Memphis Soul Stew was actually recorded at that studio, but it's with like Steve Cropper, Duck Dunn, Al Jackson. It's the hippest intro anywhere. It starts off with Duck Dunn. And it's like, let me get a half pint of some Memphis guitar. And it's like, and then he goes, let me get about a half pound of some fat bottom drums. And he gives you the recipe for the Memphis Soul Stew, you know? And it's all instrumental.
Do you have a jam like that?
There's an instrument.
Do you give the ingredients for the Austin Soul Stew?
We don't, not officially, but it's all there, baby. You just listen.
And so that record's coming out in July.
Yeah. Oh, I've already gone through like 400 copies of it, actually.
So it's out. The official release.
The official release party is in July.
Okay, so you can get this Austin Soul Stew.
You can get it right now. The only place that has it in stock is Waterloo. But I don't even have it.
I bet you can order it from Waterloo.
Yeah.
I bet you can order if you live somewhere else.
Yeah.
Get in on the internet and order a physical copy.
Yeah.
And get it.
That'd be killer.
Do that.
I personally don't even have any. I ran out of. I don't have any. They're only ones that are available there right now. But I got to put it on iTunes. So that should be. I need to do that. I should do that after this. Maybe by the time you put this on the web, we'll just say that it's on iTunes because this is going to be on the. It'll be there by then.
Oh, yeah. It should be up by then. It doesn't take very long.
Yeah.
So what about Deadeye? That's the Grateful Dead tribute band.
Yeah, that's a hoot, man.
Do you guys play much?
They play more than I... They don't always have me on the shows.
Okay.
It's like I play the role of Pigpen, and he, you know, would only do like a couple songs a night, really. Like, so if I'm on a show, they do like a three-hour show. I usually do four to five tunes on a show. Uh-huh. So the rest of the time, I'm just hanging out. It's a pretty easy gig. But then they don't always do pig shows, you know. So I'm not always on it.
Where do they play?
The Parish and Stubbs.
Really?
La Zona Rosa. Yeah, they get pretty good.
It's like they would play somewhere outside. Why do I think that?
There's been some outdoor shows. I don't know.
Threadgills or something. You know what I mean?
There's never been a show at Threadgills.
That's weird.
Ray's backstage. You know PJ Harrington? He manages the band. He works with Asleep at the Wheel. I think he's like their tour manager. He's a really cool guy.
I like Asleep at the Wheel, though. I'd love to have Ray Benson on my show.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, that'd be awesome. I've never met him. I bet he'd be a hoot.
I jammed with him. And we played these songs at somebody's birthday party one time together. It was weird. It was like him, me, Casey McPherson from Alpha Rev, and Bob Schneider was playing drums.
Really?
Yeah, and it was at someone's birthday. And we played some song, but he didn't get the bridge right. And so I said something.
You called him out.
Yeah, I was like, that's not the bridge. It's just, and I don't normally even do that. But I did do that because I felt like we were doing it wrong. And if I was going to sing this part, and Casey was going to sing this part, he was playing the wrong chord for us to do. For it to make sense. And the melody had to change and all this stuff. And so when I did, he just kind of looked at me and nodded no. It's like, I think what you're trying to do is go to A minor. It's like, nope. I was like, okay, whatever, dude, you're giant.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to say. I would never correct him again.
I got a good story that I thought of when you told me that.
What?
It's a Jimmy Reed story.
Yeah.
I heard Delbert McClinton was Jimmy Reed's guitar player for a little while.
Really?
Yeah. And,
You like that guy? You like Delbert?
Yeah, dude.
All those kind of guys? Like the giving it up for your love. Joey Jeff, you like those guys?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
I like...
He's more of a... But,
I like... Joey Jeff's cool. I like Delbert McClinton's a really great harmonica player, dude.
Right.
Frosty was Delbert's drummer for like 8 years, dude.
Yeah.
So he has... Dude, that shit's funky, man. He has a great record from 78.
Right, he's a little more soul-oriented than a Joey Jeff guy.
I mean, Joey Jeff's great too, but yeah. But yeah, that wouldn't... Yeah. Jerry Jeff was more that cosmic cowboy kind of thing. But Delbert, dude, yeah, hip arrangements. He has a record from Muscle Shoals he did in 78. Bonnie Bramlett's one of the background singers.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so go with the Jimmy Reed story.
Okay, so Jimmy Reed.
Delbert's playing guitar for Jimmy Reed.
Yeah, and Jimmy Reed was a notorious drunk. And he would play like rack harmonica, so it was all up in his face, like Dylan style, and he'd sit in a chair and play. And so he came out, and he sat down, and the band's already out there on the stage. And the first thing he does is he just throws up all over his rack harmonica, like the microphone, all over himself. And so Delbert McClinton just kind of shakes his head and he pulls out a cigarette and he lights it up. And Jimmy Reed shoots over and looks at him and he goes, "No smoking on my stage."
But the throwing up is perfectly normal.
Just like Ray Benson went wrong.
So he threw up probably from drinking.
Oh, absolutely.
Which takes us all the way back to the beginning, which is a great place to end this, is that you will probably never throw up into your harmonica because you're not going to be drunk.
Yeah, you're right.
Kurt McMahon.
Yeah, Johnny Gowdy.
Fucking A, man.
That was cool.
Anything I'm missing here? Anything we're missing? We missing anything?
No, man. I mean, there's always... We'll have to do it again.
Yeah.
And not talk about vacuum cleaners. We could have fit more into the vacuum cleaner section.
Yeah, maybe we should do this two more times. One time, talk only about the vacuum cleaners.
Okay.
And I'll release it as an extra bonus episode to people that are super interested in antiquated...
sales techniques?
No, but
because the vocations, I'll tell you this,
like door-to-door sales
vocations, indeed. Yeah. Because I'll tell you this right now, the vacuum cleaner is very progressive.
Of course,
it's I've not got antiquated. A vacuum
cleaner here. I'm not a fan of it, so I might end up having to buy something if you're still available to do it. King Corduroy, Cactus Fuzz, King Biscuit, Blues Review, and Dead Eye, and also just Kurt McMahon.
Yes,
look for all of these names. Google them if you can. Look for them in papers, newspapers. Do you travel? You go to Houston and Dallas and stuff?
Yeah. I got a van I ride around in.
I've ridden in that van.
Yeah, you're right.
It's a good van.
Yeah, it gets me from place to place. It's kind of stinky, but I don't mind it.
No.
It's comfortable. I've slept in it many places. Hey, check it out. Austin Soul Stew. That's the new record. King Corduroy, Austin Soul Stew. All the other stuff is, you know, just keeps me busy in Austin, but... trying to put my foot forward with that.
Yeah.
So
okay,
everybody.
King Corduroy, Austin Soul Stew.
You can only fit so much in your head, you know.
Of course. There's a lot to remember after this interview.
Just focus on that.
Yeah. Thanks for coming by, man.
All right. Thanks, Johnny.
Yeah. I like that guy, man. Kurt McMahon, King Corduroy. Get out there, man. Check out that band, man. They're fucking awesome. All right. He's a great guy too, man, and he looks awesome. You got to go in there. You got to look at the picture of him on my Facebook, on the How Did I Get Here Facebook page. All right, hey, and while you're there looking at his picture on the Facebook page of How Did I Get Here, why don't you like it? We need some more likes on there, all right? And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Johnny Gowdy, also Instagram at Johnny Gowdy, and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Thank you to Kurt for coming by. It was a great time talking to him. It was always a good time hanging out with him. He hung out for a while afterwards, and we shot the shit. Good guy. He showed up. He hung out till my next interview showed up. And so that was good. Thank you, Kurt. Thank you, the listener. I appreciate it. You know, I love you guys. Write me. Talk to me. Tell me what's going on with you. How about a little bit more King Corduroy from Austin? Soul Stew, their new record. Maybe it's on iTunes by now. I hope so. Here you go. All right. Let's get down.
I got a funny feeling deep in me, and it got me wondering, chasing those dreams. Won't you jump in, baby, like a battery? Will you get me started running down the freeway? But we gotta go.
I gotta go, I gotta get home back. I gotta go, I gotta get home back. I gotta
get back on track. We'll be right back.
so. Honey, baby, say my name. Well, what you guessing, baby? Oh, it ain't no good, ain't no good. You ain't learned a lesson. I said you gotta go, 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 go. Get back on down to Sunday school. We gotta go.
I got to go, I got to get home, babe. I gotta go, I gotta go, I gotta go.
We gotta get the mag on track. Baby, oh, but honey, you know I'm ready.